a podcast brought to you by Energy Live News.
Now, for 30, well, I think, yeah, since we've been going as Energy Live News, we've been always looking at what the energy markets do and the work of brokers. 10 years ago, we launched Telca, Energy Live Consultancy Awards. Part of the reason we launched it was to try and clean up the sector by rewarding good practice. But if you've been anywhere near general news over the last few weeks, you'll have seen lots of stories about brokers, TPIs, whatever you want to call them, consultants, and bad practice. And this is the thing that I think the sector has struggled with. Fees, commission, deals that are done, malpractice in the way that contracts have been sold. It's dogged the energy sector since I've been in it, and that's 2010. And it's been long running way before that as well. And I suppose the thing is that, you know, we have to look at where this lies. A couple of years ago, in fact, more than that now, pre-COVID, there was a lot of talk about a code of conduct. The Ofgem has looked into the brokers market several times, and many chats have happened and many kind of papers have been written, but we've never really seen anything that says, actually, do you know what? This is now a much cleaner regulated market. So what do we do? Where does the impetus lie to make sure that consumers are getting the right value and the honesty that they deserve? Well, that's something I'm going to discuss today with Harvey Sinclair, the CEO of eEnergy. Harvey, hello.
Good morning.
Where do you sit on this? Because if you look at it, we all know people are doing good work, right? Out there. We meet them. We meet them at industry events, our events. You have clients that you work with who'll say, you know, I really like what you're doing, you guys. But there is no getting away from it. There's a core, maybe a small core, but there's a vein that runs through the whole broker market that is still not very reputable.
Yeah, look, it's a good question. And I think the problem we've got is it's a very complex space. And our industry is also very complex with a number of different service providers doing a lot of different things. You refer to brokers, and I think therein lies the problem. If you go back, you know, 20 years before a lot of the old financial markets got regulated, you had a lot of traditional phone-based brokerage that have all ended up going to the screen through marketplaces or through technology platforms. Probably got one of the last sectors that still operates in parts of its area as a traditional brokerage. I think the problem that people are starting to recognize is that at the smaller end of low energy consuming customers, so micro businesses, SMEs, single one-man bands, have got a low level of sophistication and are potentially vulnerable to unscrupulous pricing policies. And then at the top end of the market, you've got very experienced customers who price is just 10% of the service they want from a energy management business. And so they're poles apart. I think it's important that when we discuss this, we sort of break down both the industry and also the services and look at where the problem areas sit and how might the industry regulate itself or get regulated by, you know, a government body.
Your background isn't energy, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
No, that's right. So, you know, my background is from media, technology, services-based business. So I come to this with a fresh perspective, if you like.
And that's why I wanted to explore. So when you first thought about, you know, eEnergy and what you've created, now you're in the sector, what was your initial reaction, having come from other areas where you do know about regulation? And yes, we all know what things were like years ago, but things have cleaned up, particularly you mentioned the financial sector, enormously so, with many different regulations they have to follow. When your first reaction was, actually, let's be honest, you can have contracts that don't list the commission. You can have deals that are done. What was your reaction to that? That this is the way this sector works?
So firstly, I was interested in the sector because it plays an important part of the journey with a customer on their energy transition. But secondly, I saw it as an opportunity because where you've got fragmented markets or you've got deregulated markets, there is always an opportunity to provide a better service at a better price. And that's one of the motivations that I had coming into this market, which was to try and find a layer of disruption that could do things differently.
One of the biggest companies we can't get away from was UtilityWise, right? And I don't know whether you were in the market then, 2019 when it collapsed. And that was a huge company working at the high level that you talked about. This wasn't a one-man band, and it collapsed with kind of, I think it was about 90 odd million in debts, and 600-700 people lost their jobs. And that was, I thought that would be the real wake-up call. And I can't recall whether you were in the industry then or not, but having looked at that and seen what happened there, what's your thinking about that? Because many said this would be the moment, this is the Enron moment or whatever you want to call it, that makes things clean up, but it hasn't happened since.
No, look, it was before I joined the sector, but it was certainly a big warning sign as to what not to do in terms of how to position a business. I mean, bear in mind, UtilityWise was predominantly a service provider looking at micro SME businesses, yeah, who I think is where the bulk of our, let's call it malpractice or overpricing or whatever you want to call it, sort of sits. And I think also UtilityWise not only had bad commercial policies and bad, if you like, incorrect sales incentivization to its staff, so it encouraged the wrong behavior.
Yeah.
But also,
yeah,
I think it was a very poorly governed business as a financially run regulated business internally. I don't think that was done at the highest standards either. I think they had two problems. They had a poor sales approach,
yeah,
and a poor product, and I think they had a poorly run business.
We had Ofgem. We had commissions look into this. We've had so many different things, you know, even talk of a voluntary code of conduct. Has the sector, let's not talk about the sector itself, let's talk about regulation. Has that not been as robust as it could have been, do you think? Do you think Ofgem has been toothless in this regard?
Without question, there's two things. There's two areas that I think are capable of accountability. One is certainly at the micro SME end of the business, this market has got to be regulated. Without question.
I'd agree with you there. And we've been saying that for ages.
It's a case of when. I think the second is there's got to be, the suppliers have got to regulate themselves. And you know, at the end of the day, I think if the suppliers themselves set best practice and set frameworks and set governance and set a sort of, if you like, a baseline of transparent fee acceptance from third-party intermediaries, then it becomes a self-regulated market immediately. The only reason, you know, when you create a void, something is attracted to fill it. And
yeah,
what's happened in this, yeah, industry is the suppliers have inadvertently, I don't think necessarily it's been a proactive, conscious strategy. I think there's a void being created inadvertently by the suppliers that opportunistically people have taken an opportunity to exploit it over the past.
But that point there, and I want to talk about suppliers in a second, but shouldn't that be the point that Ofgem comes in and says, right, this is out of order, we're going to regulate? Because suppliers have codes, there's a supplier license, and they're really hot on that. And we regularly run stories of people being fined for not doing their payments or, you know, their commitments to eco it, whatever it is. But when it comes to tackling, I've had honest conversations with Ofgem myself, and I get the feeling that there's two things going on, and I'd like your view on it. One is, I don't really know whether Ofgem understands what the TPI consultant broker market does, right?
That's the problem.
Yeah, and the second one is they just don't have enough resources. So I wondered what you think.
Okay, so that goes right back to the beginning. So because the energy management, if you like, industry is a catch-all phrase for, let's say, a dozen or so different service offerings.
Yeah.
We're talking in this conversation primarily about a switching service. So for traditional brokers that are, let's say, 90% of the market, who operate in, let's say, a price range of customers with energy spends of £10,000 to £100,000 a year, which in new money is sort of £20,000 to £200,000, and we'll come back to that in a second. You know, you've got a very low level of service being charged at a high price. There's the problem. Mm. You know, providing a price, let's say you take a restaurant, a single restaurant on its own, who used to have a £50,000 bill and has now got a £150,000 bill, okay? They need a price. They don't need a service in contract.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't need additional services once they've got their price and their contract. They need a connection from a new service provider. And so in an old market where the energy prices were going down, brokers were on the phone hounding customers saying, we can save you some money. You can get a cheaper contract.
Yeah.
And so when you've got a market that was going down, arguably the customer's just excited about getting a contract that's going to cost less.
Of course.
Suddenly, you know, you turn that around in the last year and you've got a market that's going up. Dynamics are completely different. So it's caused price discovery in all sorts of different areas of this sort of pricing market. But going back to the service in a sort of a market that's either flat or declining, the only service that broker is providing is a availability of a price with a supplier who's happy with the credit of that consumer.
Yeah, a commodity exchange, basically.
And
yeah.
You know, in terms of effort versus, you know, equitable service and price, you know, that is a low level of service which shouldn't carry a very high price for that service.
Have you had discussions with Ofgem? Right, you're clearly passionate about this. Have you had anything? Have they wanted to sit down and talk? And I remember about 5 years ago, they said, "Oh, we're going to go and meet loads of people and really look." But I don't think anything ever came of their kind of tour around. We invited people to come to events and address the broker market.
Yeah, so because we are positioned and the businesses that we've acquired are largely in the majority sort of not in this space, you know, and providing a price to our customers is probably 15 to 20% of what we do in this particular service proposition. So, you know, we often don't charge for procurement. We often just 0% the procurement piece of our contracts. So it hasn't been something that we've had exposure to. There have been odd instances where we've recognized there's been a historical contract that hasn't got price disclosure in it. And in those instances, our philosophy is to firstly question, has value been provided? How are we providing value? And have we, if you like, passed the red face test? Do we think we have in that contract charged the right amount for that service? And ultimately, that's what every business owner has got to look at themselves in the mirror and say, is there been a fair value of value exchanged here?
Yeah. And I get what you're saying about the wider stuff that you're providing as a proper consultancy to help change, but that procurement, you know, the monitoring of the clarity around fees and that, it probably goes to the heart of why all of this has happened. Because if regulation is tight on that, then even if it is being done at the smaller end of the market and then it's caught on, it stops the kind of reputational leak that happens to all of it. Yeah, I'm a journalist. You get the tabloid press give every journalist a bad name, right? Because the gutter press, as people call it. And there's an element that you need regulation and there's supposed to be a code of conduct for journalists, which does generally work. But is that where it's gone? Because it's like mission creep. Small amounts are let go, and then that affects everyone, even if the larger parts of the market, and we know very much so, work very, very, you know, stringently to be as open and honest as they can. But they're tarnished.
The regulation has to start with the suppliers first. Okay.
Yeah.
No question, because that is the root cause of creating a void. You know, you will always get unscrupulous opportunists in any sector you go into, whether it's
of course
construction or derivatives trading, if it's not regulated and there is money to be made. And that's a fact of life. People will take advantage of weaknesses in systems. We have a systematic weakness in the way the supply market works, full stop.
I suppose the weirdest thing is, if you went back, right, you'd never create a market like this. This is a function of what happened when we deregulated in the 80s, where suddenly there was a void, wasn't there? Because you go from a nationalized industry where you don't really need a sales force selling contracts because the power's coming and people know it's their local energy board that provided it.
And it goes back to that transition. Ultimately, providing a price to a counterparty doesn't need a broker. It needs a screen, it needs an algorithm, and it needs a marketplace. And ultimately, providing a price, if it's a commodity price for a price like energy, whether it's gas or power, doesn't need a broker. It needs technology. And so this whole industry will disintermediate itself in time at the lower end. And the successful businesses who are platform plays are the ones that are going to win. And the brokers will either be forced out through regulation, or they'll be forced out through that disruption and transition to a technology play on a marketplace basis.
Let's talk about what you're doing. So, okay, you've been very honest there, and you've admitted that some contracts historically you've got, you're not happy with. Are you disclosing your fees now? If I come and sign up to be a customer of eEnergy, will you say to me, right, Sumit, we're going to do a deal, I'm going to help you with this, whatever it is, and here's my fee up front. You know what it is. This is what you're going to be paying from me.
100%. All our customers that we engage with have a service level agreement, a consultancy agreement, where our services are defined, and any fee structure that we have in there, if it's a supplier pays fee structure or a direct, if it's direct, obviously it's a mute point, but if it's a supplier pays, it is transparent and disclosed.
What are you doing about things that haven't gone right in the past? What are you doing about reparations for contracts that may have been missold or may not have the level of clarity that you want your business to have now?
Yeah, so I think clearly you buy two businesses that have got collectively 1,500 customers. You recognize that there is always going to be legacy issues, whether it's about pricing or service. Yeah. So the first thing we do, and often those contracts often sleep below the radar unless they're a strategic customer. So if you've got...
That's what I was going to say. Are you going through those? And have you got a team going through auditing it?
Yeah, exactly. We have a methodical cleansing process. So as you near towards the sort of, if you like, the annual, the anniversary of a contract being, you know, coming to a renewal, for example, and it's a non-strategic customer and it's a transaction-based customer, you know, obviously price becomes something you're retrospectively looking at. If there's no service being provided since that contract was first put into place, really all you care about is, well, what's the right price for this customer now? So point one is making sure that any customer that perhaps in today's market, in today's, if you like, energy price environment, seem to have paid a high price for a low service. We need to provide a high service for a lower price. The issue is more a case around where there's ongoing service in an account for a customer that perhaps, in my view, has been perhaps overcharged for the service they're getting. So the first thing I look at is, how do I level that playing field and start providing more value to that customer? Compliance reporting, carbon reporting, providing free bill validation, for example, starting to backfill services in a situation where we can say to a customer, we want to provide you with more value. So that's the first, you know, if a customer's getting good value, they don't mind paying a price.
I get that. Before we end, a couple of things I want to go through, which is the market is changing, as we can all see it. Net zero is now going to be a way of life. I was at International Energy Week recently, and you know, even oil and gas companies know that that's where the future will be. You talked about whether it's through natural selection, let's call it, or regulation, that a lot of this market you think will sort of eventually clean up. We need variety, and it's great, and I know you're a big company, but there's got to be an element of where there's a mix of the larger players and the smaller. So where do you see the market being within 5 years?
I think the SME micro market will have transitioned entirely to the screen, i.e. to a platform play, where the notion of, in a similar way, the amount of people that use a travel agent, for example, booking holiday is less than 2%. I can't imagine a world in the next few years where you've got people picking up the phone trying to sell a restaurant an energy contract the same way that perhaps the last 2 or 3 years you've seen. I think on the higher consuming, more complex energy user market, which is where, let's say, people with a 5 million or 10 million plus spend a year, they are obsessing, and rightly so, around compliance and carbon reporting. And price is just a little bit of the service offering they need. What they need is advice about how to use less energy, where to get it differently, and how to make sure they're working in a more compliant way. And that's that. So I think the world of energy management is going to change completely in its look and feel. And
to move from a procurement servicing to actually a strategic
sustainability and compliance services offering. Yeah. With technology products, look at what Octopus have done, for example.
That's right. Yeah,
Kraken.
Kraken. Yeah, absolutely.
They're a phenomenal business with a phenomenal service offering. And the reason they're winning, and rightly, and so should they, is because they're disrupting the market with technology.
Yeah.
So we, as a B2B market, have to move faster with technology, and we have to recognize that business models will change.
Funny thing about this sector is, and I suppose, you know, having been in others, it is a bit sleepy, right? It's got these two things going on, which is, it's at the heart of everything. And there's a lot of innovation in lots of new ideas, like smart grid and all this stuff. But there's a lot of, dare I say, legacy way of behaving, just generally across the energy sector, that's from the days of it being a nationalized industry. Many people have said this, and it's not my phrase, but energy is analog and it's struggling to go digital. Is that starting to happen? And if so, will it only happen if, dare I say, new people like you and other people come into the sector?
Yeah, it's a good way of describing it. It is fundamentally 80% analog, and that's probably being generous. It's probably more like 90% analog. And I think, you know, the environment we've had over the last 3 years hasn't been conducive to risk takers coming into this sector.
Yeah.
So you've had capital constrained financial markets, and you've had inflationary driven markets, and you've had regulatory issues in the financial services space, have all meant that this is a sector which has sort of been on autopilot for a little bit. And now, I think, is an opportunity to move quicker. But I think it requires new investors, new technologies, and new people coming into the market. I also think the suppliers need to, again, have increased level of shake-up. Yeah. We've seen a shake-up in the last, you know, 2 years. I think that's only a good thing.
Yeah.
And I do think that technology is going to play the big part in changing the way people experience energy services.
And finally, for you, and you know, you mentioned suppliers several times. Do you have that absolute honest conversation that you wouldn't work with a supplier who said, "Hey, Harvey, let's do a sort of deal on the side. We can talk about this and feed this into it." You want to have crystal clear terms, and a lot of them have cleaned up their act. But let's be honest. There are elements that I've always said sit on the blame of what the practice that we started this conversation with is with the suppliers. Are you having that direct, open conversation with the supplier that you're going to work with to say, this is the way we want it. We want it absolutely clear. And these are the lines in the sand that we won't cross.
Yeah, I've made it clear to my senior management team that I'd rather do no business than bad business. And so I would happily, as much as it may sound strange, walk away from revenue if I didn't feel that we were providing fair value to the customer. So yeah, absolutely. The only way you can build a big scalable business with a long-term future is if you've got transparency and a phenomenal service offering.
Yes.
So customers have to be happy, and they have to be getting good value for money.
Before we end, are you optimistic about the future?
Yeah, I am. It's been a time of real change, right?
Tell me about it. I was at a do last night. I said, and it's like, oh, I haven't seen you for a year or two. Then I realized I haven't seen you for 4 years since COVID. And it's just like this blop that happened with COVID. It just covered everything like a glue over your life. And I think it's really had effect on everyone. So it's interesting to think that you still feel optimistic about where we're going.
Yeah, I do, actually. I think last year was different. Last year was more about being strong and robust in a difficult market. Now I think it's about taking more risks again with new ideas. And I think there is plenty of scope. This whole distributed energy ecosystem idea that where, you know, generally energy is coming from local communities and local sources is a really strong one. And I think that's going to be a really exciting area as well.
Harvey, thanks so much for your time joining us on Energy Live News.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Energy Live News podcast. Please follow us on social media and subscribe to the website at www.energylivenews.com.